The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. Yo, yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I have got a good read today, and I may have just lost it in my tabs. Where are you? Okay, yes. And this is the first, I believe this is the first I've ever read from mempoolreview.com. It's called Bitcoin's Town Square. And I have to admit, I don't think I've got an explicit author for this one. Oh, well, yes, I do. Zane Pocock at Knox Custody. Twitter handle is ZanePocock. Really good article here that I love, and I think it ties right in with what I was talking about, what we talked about in yesterday's episode about 21 million is non-negotiable and the fee market in the future, and a kind of how I think these markets are going to develop, and how I think the value of the data in the time chain, in the blockchain, whatever you want to call it, will be sorted out. And this just has such a fun perspective on it. And I love the image of the kind of town square with all the bidders and the top hats and everything that he's got in this piece. It's just a really fun analogy. So we're going to dig into this piece. I'll talk a little bit about it afterward. But again, this is on mempoolreview.com. And it's titled, Bitcoin's Town Square. Why mempools are the network's most brutal information space. To the average Bitcoin participant, mempools are simply a list of pending transactions to check in on when they have a transaction to broadcast. But they are so much more. Mempools are a bustling, brutal marketplace of pure data. They reflect all the knowledge of the pressures, needs, time preference, and means of every single participant demanding transaction settlement on the Bitcoin network. And they distill all this knowledge into a real-time price signal anyone can interpret and interact with. Mempools are the centerpiece of the entire Bitcoin economy, and they are totally underrated. Tweet. The mempool is full again. Hold on, I'll give you 100 sats per byte. Deal. Hashtag Bitcoin. Note. Mempools are tightly integrated with other components of the Bitcoin network, particularly mining and transaction verification, that are out of scope for this article to explore. We will uncover what we need to make everything clear, but this article is more focused on a mental model for understanding mempools than technical exactitude. Thousands of mempools. At its simplest abstraction, the mempool, short for memory pool, can be thought of as a database of pending Bitcoin transactions. These are transactions that have been broadcast by users but haven't yet been included in a block. Because they have not been mined into a block, such transactions are considered unconfirmed. We refer to, quote, the mempool here in quotes because this term is a colloquialism that neglects the true nature of how the Bitcoin network functions, and it's worth correcting. While the mempool would imply that there is a single master list of unconfirmed transactions, there is no such certainty. Rather, every participant running a full node will have a slightly different version. When we talk about the mempool, we thus aren't strictly talking about a ubiquitous information space. We're talking hypothetically about all the transactions spread across all the mempools. Most mempools might have most of the transactions, but the idea of the mempool is a shortcut that helps us make generalizations and perform economic calculations. Why is this? The Bitcoin protocol functions such that each node represents an intersection on a distributed network, each with a unique set of connections to other nodes. When a participant broadcasts a transaction to the network through a node, hopefully their own, The node will pass the transaction data onto the other nodes that it has direct connections with. These nodes will first verify that the transaction is legitimate, and if so, they will update their list of unconfirmed transactions to include it, and pass the data on to the other nodes that they, in turn, are connected to. Those nodes will repeat the process until the percentage of nodes with a copy of this transaction approaches 100%. This is called a transaction relay. So, what happens when those transactions are mined into a block? While humans think of miners as huge industrial enterprises hashing transaction data at great cost, nodes on the Bitcoin network simply interact with miners as they do with any other node. These nodes, which seen through a human lens, happen to, quote, mine, keep their own version of the mempool from which they select transactions to include in a block when they successfully meet the current network criteria, roughly every 10 minutes. Those blocks then propagate back through the network in much the same way as transactions, with each node verifying that they meet certain criteria, updating their copy of the settlement ledger, the blockchain, and passing the message on to others. Each individual node first tries to validate these blocks with the transactions they already have in their mempool, and request any missing transactions from peers, after which they flush these transactions from their mempool as they are no longer unconfirmed. For a high-level understanding of some of the more nuanced parts of this process, Marty Bent published a wonderful graphic explanation by Bitcoin Core contributor Amiti Utawar. This is why it's important to understand the mempool as a collection of independent mempools. It's easy to accidentally equate the idea of a shared mempool with the certainty of the blockchain and its settlement assurances. While every participant eventually stores an identical record of final settlement, the blockchain, there is no such record of truth for those transactions awaiting settlement. For our purposes, understanding the mempool as a marketplace, this is important. Calculations we might like to make will always be probabilistic. While the Bitcoin network is best seen simply as a communication protocol dealing in scarce information space, mempools are a clearinghouse for the allocation of that information space. Users of the Bitcoin protocol can roughly keep track of their unconfirmed transactions through metrics gathered from their own mempool. If you have initiated your own transactions before, you might have noticed that wallets such as Electrum will tell you its position in mempool, expressed as, say, 13 megabytes from tip. As far as a miner is concerned, the two most important data points about a transaction is its size, in terms of data requirements, not value, and the fee rate it's willing to pay. If you imagine your mempool as a list of transactions ordered by the fee rate each is paying, this is very roughly telling the participant that their transaction is estimated to be about 13 megabytes worth of greater than 1 megabyte blocks away from being included, because that is how high it is bidding. So, say 11 blocks, or 110 minutes, assuming 10-minute block times. To more technically proficient readers, please bear with me here. I recognize this is quite a simplification. The use of knowledge in Bitcoin society. Austrian economist F.A. Hayek would have loved mempools. In his 1945 essay, The Use of Knowledge in Society, he illustrates the profound importance of price signals by making the case that every economic actor has some of the information all of the time, but all of the information none of the time. At its most simplified, his argument is a knockout refutation of the idea of a planned economy. How could a central planning board possibly keep up with the dynamism of each individual component of the economy? Price signals and their fluctuations are immensely powerful, as they tend towards carrying all of this information, despite no single individual needing to know exactly why certain prices have moved in certain directions. Hayek's insight was to understand that in all cases, what is known by a single agent is only a small fraction of the sum total of knowledge held by all members of society. A decentralized economy thus complements the dispersed nature of information spread throughout society. Much like transactions propagating through mempools, specific and granular market dynamics can efficiently propagate through an entire economy via price signals. Quote, "The marvel is that in a case like that of a scarcity of one raw material, without an order being issued, without more than perhaps a handful of people knowing the cause, tens of thousands of people whose identity could not be ascertained by months of investigation are made to use the material or its products more sparingly. That is, they move in the right direction." End quote. F.A. Hayek. It's no surprise that in our present information age, Hayek's essay is gaining prominence anew. For example, the use of knowledge in society is central to Jimmy Wales' philosophy for how to manage the Wikipedia project. At the outset, he would, quote, "imagine a world in which every single person on the planet is given free access to the sum of all human knowledge." Extending Hayek's thesis beyond the purely economic realm and into all knowledge, what is more likely to be successful? The centrally planned mission of Google to, quote, "organize the world's information," or the organic, open Wikipedia built on the foundational Hayekian idea that, quote, "when information is dispersed, as it always is, decisions are best left to those with the most local knowledge." Applying these ideas back to the economic information spaces of Bitcoin, the impactful nature of mempools becomes apparent. When a participant is attempting to broadcast a transaction to the Bitcoin network, it matters not why their mempool is giving them certain indicators, but those indicators carry enough real-time knowledge from the activity of the entire global Bitcoin economy to make the best economic decision for those UTXOs they control at that point in time. If, for example, a network participant's mempool is starting to fill up, one might say the network is getting busy. This might be because more people were buying and not withdrawing Bitcoin from exchanges in anticipation of some bullish event. It might be because participants are nervous about the solvency of a particular exchange and they're running for the exits via base layer final settlement. It might be because a large actor is consolidating UTXOs, and so on and so forth, and in all sorts of combinations. But the basic principle of interacting with mempools is this: when a block is mined, transactions are removed from mempools. Others continue to fill up. And sometimes there's a traffic jam if new transactions arrive at a higher rate than they are cleared. Most of these hypotheses can, of course, be tested with further research, but what's important for the average actor is simple and doesn't require any further knowledge. For whatever reason, more transactions are awaiting settlement. As a result, your mempool is telling you that you'll have to pay up for your place in the limited information space of a newly minted block. This principle can be illustrated with tools such as the beautiful mempool.space. On the live graph view below, stratified by fee rate, it can be observed that mempools have been getting slightly busier over the course of the past 2 hours. With 13 megabytes of unconfirmed transactions outstanding, the tool estimates the network will require the next 11 blocks to clear if no new transactions are added. We don't need to know why. It is helpful enough that we can observe the entire global demand for block space, i.e. demand for inclusion in a future mined block, in this concentrated open knowledge. The white dotted line on the graph shows us which bids are most likely to be included in the next block. Though this is no guarantee, it's a calculation we can make based on what we know to be one of the primary miner incentives: earning as much from fees as possible. From the knowledge of global block space demand illustrated in the mempool visualization above, we can go on to calculate estimates for Bitcoin's native price signal, fee rates, and other knowledge, such as estimated time to settlement. In the blockchain tab below, the tool takes knowledge such as the current state of the mempool, the protocol's allowable block size, and the protocol's target block time of 10 minutes to estimate the price a transaction must bid to be included in N number of blocks, or N times 10 minutes, as measured in human time. Based on the needs and knowledge exclusive to each individual participant looking to use the protocol at any given moment in time, they can make their own calculations for the fee they can afford to pay, and the urgency with which they need their transactions reflected in the global ledger of final settlement. And they perform this calculation against the entire sum of knowledge of every single other participant using the network across the entire globe, all concentrated into these few signals. Bitcoin's native market. There is something underappreciated about the nature of mempools. Taken together as the abstract idea of the mempool, they represent a bustling global marketplace of pure distilled information, interpreted in line with other knowledge to give an idea of the global demand and availability to settle transactions, with no group of people responsible for anything, just individuals doing what's required to meet their needs with whatever means they have available to them. From the Hayekian perspective, specific knowledge of the external factors influencing the price signal for settlement are irrelevant to the individual participant. What your mempool tells you is all you need to know. It's a pure, network-native marketplace that can be efficiently interacted with in the complete absence of any external inputs. You're using information space, scarcity encumbered by UTXOs, measured in units of Bitcoin, to buy a position for settlement in another form of information space, block space, based on summarized global knowledge you can glean from yet another, more ephemeral information space, mempools. The mempool is Bitcoin's town square. It's a brutal, unrelenting marketplace, the exchange at the center of the entire Bitcoin network's economic activity. Everyone is bidding their worth to anyone who will listen. Sometimes they won't be heard, and they'll miss a good opportunity. Sometimes they'll bid low and get lucky. This is a marketplace that exists purely in Bitcoin's information spaces. No restricted access via on- or off-ramps. No one pleading their case for a charitable interpretation of their needs. Just a ruthless, global settlement market native to the Bitcoin network. If Bitcoin does indeed become the center of global commerce in the years to come, the mempool will be the single most important component to watch for many of those using it. In this pure, anarchic, meaning absence of authority, not chaos, global market, daily news updates will attempt to interpret contributing factors to make predictions for concerned participants. High-profile participants will pontificate on what certain events mean. Gossip will spread about large participants wasting their precious, scarce UTXO information space overpaying on fees. So too will companies be frowned upon and called out for such inefficient use of block space that they affect the entire network, such as the case of the daily BitMEX broadcast at 1308 UTC. Which regularly changes the shape of the mempool and forces other participants to adjust their bids or expectations as a result. The author of that piece, B10C, is an early example of what might be considered a mempool researcher. Prolific Bitcoin Stack Exchange contributor Merch might similarly be considered thus. Tweet from Merch. In before some chimera muses about transaction spam again, someone appears to be queuing low time preference transactions to benefit from periods with low block space demand. Given the low count, see the top, and large size, see the bottom, these appear to be consolidation transactions. When people talk about Jevons paradox as it relates to predictions about Bitcoin's future, this network-native marketplace for transaction settlement will be the centerpiece of such a dynamic. Jevons paradox is the observation that increasing efficiency from technological progress does not alleviate pressures on the underlying commodity's use, but instead tends to increase the rate of consumption from rising demand. Thus, as efficiencies are found for Bitcoin's block space, pooling transactions to share costs, second-layer solutions clearing in isolation and only settling intermittently, etc. The opportunities they bring for more participants and more use cases will be profound. And without talking to another soul or learning any of the specifics, all of this will be reflected in the simple knowledge we can glean from our mempools. And that is Zane's piece, Bitcoin's Town Square, on mempoolreview.com. And just because this is at the bottom, I'll go ahead and say I don't know anything about Knox custody. That's Fort Knox, like K-N-O-X. Right at the end here, he's like, private key custody must be an incredibly focused activity. Custody is a significant risk and represents much more than the cost of doing business. Those who need to manage keys need fully insured partners to offset that risk. Check out Knox Custody to help secure your share of Bitcoin's scarce information space. Now, this is not a, I'm reading out their work here, so I should read to the very end. But this is not an endorsement of their service. I don't know anything about it. I just thought this was a really, really cool article. But if you want to check that out, that is at mempoolreview.com. All right, with that, let's hit our sponsor for the show. Then I want to talk a little bit about this piece and why I think it relates to the point yesterday, and why one of the things that he brings up right there at the end, actually, has huge potential or has a major impact on how we will think about the mempool going forward, and how Lightning Network, second layers, pooled transactions and other aggregation methods and stuff, and of course higher layer markets, how they will affect transaction fees on the base layer, and more specifically hit that fallacy that Lightning or off-chain payments are taking away from miner revenue. I think that's a incredibly simplistic and backwards thinking, but we'll talk about it in just a second. Let's hit our sponsor, and we will get back into Guy's take. All right, so this article, I stumbled upon just a couple of days ago, and I just thought it was a really cool perspective on how to think about the mempool, because it is something that is deeply overlooked. And right there at the end, I thought was something that was really cool to point out, is that the mempool may be, like, when Bitcoin becomes like a global asset, essentially. Well, I mean, it is a global asset, but when it becomes like the foundation of the global financial system on the internet, and it really becomes that infrastructure level thing that we are all depending on, the mempool will be that thing that we are most watching, that is that news item as to like what's going on in the space, what's happening around the globe right now in the demand for block space, in the financial environment, in the weather of the monetary system. And you have these major fluctuations, these shifts. And it's funny, is it absolutely does. By the way, the shout out to mempool.space. Just if you don't know, mempool.space. I use that religiously, and it really is just a fascinating visual of the memory pool of and it has a couple of different variations on like how to visualize what's going on. It's basically like a block explorer in some degree. I think you can just check any transaction hash and block height and stuff. Yeah. You can look up anything. So it's just basically just a block explorer, except it's just got really great visualizations and views of the mempool in particular. And I really do use it a lot. It's a great resource, and it's just kind of cool to, I don't know, maybe I'm just a freakish nerd here, but like, it's cool to go through these things. And when like the mempool gets really big, I go and watch it like it's fucking sports statistics. But this leads me back to the conversation we were having in yesterday's episode with 21 million Bitcoin is non-negotiable, and the fee market, and all of this stuff. And I recently had somebody bring up, and I responded to him in some thread, about how like off chain and like second layer, solutions like Lightning Network and all of these things actually take away from the security of the base layer, and they take away from miner fees and all of this stuff. And all I can think is that this is a complete misunderstanding. Like it just, it's like there's a very, very simplistic way to view where fees are. And if you don't think about any dynamics, if you don't think about pressures and moving one direction or the other, if you don't think about how these things grow and why one would get adopted, why you would move to extra layers, and like the dynamics in actually pricing that, like, well, then, yeah, it just looks like fees are in a different place. But he actually addresses the kind of the concept, the core concept in this of Jevons' paradox is that, like, the very need for technological progress to alleviate pressures on, like, for increasing efficiency of the use of block space, and the fact that we have this scarce asset, block space, we have this data market, essentially, for pricing the immutability of the Bitcoin blockchain, actually causes increased pressure on the use of the underlying commodity, because, like, the more we can actually pack into it, the more profound and the more, like, widespread the tools that we can actually make from it, the services that are actually possible on top of it. Something like the Lightning Network, I think, will have a huge net increase in the fees on the base layer, because Lightning Network will make so many different services and, you know, decentralized storage and messaging and all of these things on top of Bitcoin possible and scalable, and it will be the thing that brings in the next 30 million, 50 million people who actually use it, who actually find the incredible potential in these protocols. And this will raise the, this will backlog the mempool. This will cause settlement to be something that really starts to command high prices, command prices that are significant, because they are settling thousands of transactions off chain, simply because of the use cases that become available, that become possible with 50 million users by having a second layer. And it doesn't matter if you have 50 megabyte blocks on the base layer, you're not going to be able to pull that off. You get to do 100 megabyte blocks, you have to do gigabyte blocks to really get something like that. But to have an off-chain solution, to have a second layer solution that must settle, that balances and settles back to this global information space, this market that is the mempool in the Bitcoin time chain, this will only work to make this market more efficient and really set a block space price. And it's just really cool to think about this as kind of, I said in the last episode that it was kind of the most crude example of it, that, and I love the idea of the town square. This is just, you know, everybody is in one, is basically yelling their bids out, into this open atmosphere, this open marketplace, this town square of sorts. It's just on a global level, and everybody's sharing these information and taking these bids. And then you have miners and people who are trying to add to this block space, who are settling these transactions, and they're grabbing them based on the most recent bids, and the weather changes, the events occur, and that causes them to bid higher, to have a higher need immediately to settle because of, like I said, some potential exchanges now, you know, uncertain about their solvency, or Lightning Network, there's some sort of a hang up, or like some major node goes down and people have to close out a bunch of channels and settle. And there's a whole lot of pressure on some second layer, like a pooling transaction group or something, that's trying to aggregate transactions and batch to get a better cost savings to either balancing or migrating channels to a different location. Like, there's going to be a powerful, robust marketplace in this, and that's also why I think the building and the establishing of derivatives in this market is actually going to be really critical, so that we actually have a futures market to see, like for instance, that Zane mentions in this the BitMEX like daily you know, aggregate, like transaction batching or whatever. And when we're unsure about the future price of block space and we don't know how the weather's going to be, that's one of those things with the very means of estimating fees is because, you know, right now we're like, oh, it'll be 11 blocks potentially before I get confirmed based on my current fees. Well, in two blocks, you know, in 20 minutes, something might happen that puts me 40 blocks behind. Estimates are based on the current mempool, but the current mempool is dependent, like it's a factor of time as to how, like when you actually get, you know, put into the blockchain, the time chain. And because of that, something can happen in that time period that completely screw up, that can completely change the market. And that's why Lopp, I think, it was Jameson Lopp who spent a long time trying to come up with a good way to estimate, to predict essentially what the fee is going to be to really get you into the next block. And there's still not that great of tool for making that accurate. You know, there's no prediction of the future here. And that's why a futures market can actually establish the selling of block space ahead of time. And something like BitMEX, exchanges, large services, nodes, like let's say like an quote-unquote LSP, somebody on the Lightning Network that regularly does rebalancing or looping out to provide liquidity for some, you know, OTC desk or something like that. They're connected to a bunch of different services and they do this every day. Like they can pay a futures market for a potential price and they can aggregate, you know, maybe they don't need all of their space in their futures contract. They can sell it for a discount to other people in a transaction pool of peer-to-peer a batching space or something. Like I said, I use Wasabi Wallet as an example. This is a group of people who have a coordinator that they do not have to trust, but that they are all pulling information inputs and outputs together into a single group of transactions, into a single transaction, so that the history, there's no specific thread to follow. There's no specific chain of transactions to follow that says this is person A and this is the three transactions that ended to exactly person A's second wallet. Like you're batching with a whole bunch of other people and they do this in a trustless manner. This exact sort of method can be done in a decentralized in a peer-to-peer method for just transaction batching in general. Just ignore the whole coin join and trying to get privacy. You could just do it to save block space. Save money on your signatures and save money on the amount of like batching with other people. I think every transaction saves, I'm going to get it wrong, but it's like some portion of the transaction data is saved. I mean, just for off the top of my head, you only have one transaction ID, whereas in the other case, you'd have 100 transaction IDs if you've got 100 participants. And no matter what, whatever data you can save in batching is a huge, huge cost savings. And signatures are the largest part, and they are exactly the part that has the most capability of being aggregated, of being batched, of having the capability of being far, far more efficient. Again, I mentioned something referred to as Schnorr. Schnorr signatures are something that are coming in the future, and that enables a potential down-the-road improvement of cross-input aggregation, which just means that rather than 20 people going into a transaction and each having their own signature for their input, like individual signatures, instead everybody re-signs the same signature that basically releases or confirms the keys for every single input. So instead of 20 inputs and 20 signatures, you would have 20 inputs and one signature. And that's a huge space savings. That's exactly the sort of market that will develop. And futures markets are exactly the sort of, you know, in a global space, you could have competing futures markets. You could have miners and LSPs like fully integrated into these things and trying to, you could have bids. Just the amount of stuff that can be built on top of this from this global, just open broadcast bid and ask sort of town square that we have in the mempool. There's an ocean of data there and participation just on a global scale that can be turned, that can be used for so many things. And I think that price discovery will be incredibly powerful, and it will make the uses, the number of uses and the variety of uses for Bitcoin with second layer solutions and additional like means of efficiency, like aggregating and pooling and all that sort of stuff. It will make Bitcoin so much more useful in a direct, like in your face sense for so many different services and applications. That will have a consistent, like I truly think we'll have a very consistent and very robust, excellent price discovery in the value of block space in discovering the price of what it means to be part of the Bitcoin time chain. So, I guess that's probably all I wanted to talk about. I just thought this was a really cool analogy, and I figured you guys would probably enjoy it because I did. And with that, we'll close this out. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to check out mempool.review and Zane Pocock. It's ZanePoccok on Twitter. Of course, I will have links to all of that good stuff in the show notes so that you can go check it out. And there's some other great links in that article, actually, too, if you want to go read it. So don't forget to stack your sats to get your auto DCA plan to buy your Bitcoin on a regular basis to secure your Bitcoin savings plan for the long term. I buy every week $50, and I never have to think about it thanks to Swan Bitcoin. I don't have to touch it, and I do it with the lowest fees that I can get anywhere, and that's pretty awesome. If you want to do that and get $10 free worth of sats to start you off, swanbitcoin.com/guy. That's the place to go, and we will go ahead and close this episode out. Thank you to Zane for this article, and a thank you to mempoolreview.com for hosting it. With that, I'm out. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.